gate slammed shut as Sereni's cart rolled back into Kei.
You're certain he's the one in charge?
You are correct, my lady. My information about the gang leaders was outdated. They called this new come up Nord Spirit. His rise was a recent event. Most haven't heard of him more than a month ago. And the one man claims that Nord Spirit and Sheol are the same person. The reports agree that he defeated both Karete and Aeyndir. Apparently, the second confrontation involved an enormous battle of some sort.
Then the people I'm meeting with are imposters.
Sereni rode in the back of the cart. It was hardly fitting transportation for a princess, but none of the day's nobles had offered her a ride in their coaches. She had intended to ask Shuden, but he had disappeared. The young Tirine had beat Sereni to him.
Apparently they are, my lady. Are you angry?
No, not really. You have to expect a measure of subterfuge in any political engagement.
Or so she said. Political necessity or not, she wanted Spirit to be honest with her. She was actually beginning to trust him, and that worried her. He chose to confide in her for some reason. Around the others, he was bright and cheerful, but no man could be that one-sidedly optimistic. When he spoke only to Sereni, he was more honest. She could see pain in his eyes, unexplained sorrows and worries. This man, warlord or not, cared about Elantris. Like all Elantrians, he was more corpse than man. His skin, wan and dry, his scalp and eyebrows, completely hairless. Her revulsion was decreasing every day, however, as she grew accustomed to the city. She wasn't to the point where she could see beauty in the Elantrians, but at least she wasn't physically sickened by them any longer. Still, she forced herself to remain aloof from Spirit's overtures of friendship. She had spent too long in politics to let herself become emotionally open with an opponent. And he was definitely an opponent, no matter how affable. He played with her, presenting false gang leaders to distract, while he himself supervised her distributions. She couldn't even be certain that he was honoring their agreements. For all she knew, the only ones allowed to receive food were Spirit's followers. Perhaps he seemed so optimistic because she was inadvertently helping him reign supreme over the city. The cart hit an especially large bump, and Sereni thumped against its wooden floor.
Oof! Next time we see Shuden, remind me to kick him.
Yes, my lady.
She didn't have to wait long. Unfortunately, she also didn't have a chance to do much kicking. She could probably have impaled Shuden if she had wished, but that wouldn't have made her very popular with the court women. This happened to be one of the days the women had chosen to practice their fencing, and Shuden attended the meeting, as usual, though he rarely participated. Thankfully, he also refrained from doing his Che Shan exercise. The women moped over him enough as it was.
They're actually improving.
Eondel was watching the women spar. Each had a steel practice sword, as well as a kind of uniform, a jumpsuit much like the one Sereni wore, but with a short ring of cloth hanging down from the waist, as if to imitate a skirt. The cloth loop was thin and useless, but it made the women feel comfortable, so Sereni didn't say anything, no matter how silly she thought it looked.
You sound surprised, Eondel. Are you that unimpressed with my ability to teach?
No, Your Highness, never.
She's teasing you, my lord.
Lucel rapped Sereni on the head with a rolled-up piece of paper as he approached.
You shouldn't let her get away with things like that. It only encourages her.
What's this?
Sereni snatched the paper from Lucel.
Our dear king's income figures.
Is he going to make it?
Barely. But his earnings entailed, coupled with his tax income, should be respectable enough to keep him from embarrassment. Congratulations, cousin. You've saved the monarchy.
Well, that's one less thing we have to worry about.
Two. Our dear friend Edain has fled the country.
What?
It's true, my lady. I heard the news just this morning. Baron Edain's lands bordered the chasm down in southern Aerilon, and recent rains caused some mudslides involving his fields. Edain decided to cut his losses and was last seen heading for Dulada.
Where he'll soon discover that the new monarchy is rather unimpressed with Aerilish titles. I think Edain will make a nice farmer, don't you?
It's not kind to make light of another's misfortune.
Misfortune comes as Domai wills.
You never liked Edain in the first place.
He was spineless, arrogant, and would have betrayed us if he'd ever found the nerve. What wasn't there to like?
Well, someone is certainly proud of himself this afternoon.
He's always like that after he makes a good business deal, Your Highness. He'll be insufferable for another week at the least.
Ah, just wait for the Aureline market. I'll make a killing. Anyway, Iadon is busy looking for someone rich enough to buy Edain's barony, so you shouldn't have to worry about him bothering you for a little while.
I wish I could say the same for you.
Serene turned her attention back to her still battling students. Eondel was right. They were improving. Even the older ones seemed to be bursting with energy. Serene held up her hand, drawing their attention, and the sparring fell off.
You're doing very well. I am impressed. Some of you are already better than many of the women I knew back in Teod. However, there is one thing that bothers me. I thought you women intended to prove your strength, to show that you were good for more than making the occasional embroidered pillowcase. However, so far, only one of you has truly shown me that she wants to change things in Aerilan. Torine, tell them what you did today.
I went to Elantris with you?
Indeed. I have invited each woman in this room several times, but only Torine has had the courage to accompany me to Elantris.
None of the women would look over at her, not even Torine, who appeared to be feeling guilty by association.
Tomorrow I will go into Elantris again, and this time no men will accompany me beyond the regular guards. If you really want to show this town that you are as strong as your husbands, you will accompany me.
Serene stood in her place, looking over the women. Heads raised hesitantly, eyes focusing on her. They would come. They were frightened near to death, but they would come. Serene smiled. The smile, however, was only half genuine. Standing as she was, before them like a general before his troops, she realized something. It was happening again. It was just like Teod. She could see respect in their eyes. Even the queen herself looked to Serene for advice now. However, respect her as they did, they would never accept her. When Serene entered a room, it fell silent. When she left, conversations began again. It was as if they thought her above their simple discussions. By serving as a model for what they wanted to become, Serene had alienated herself from them. Serene turned, leaving the women to their practicing. The men were the same. Shudin and Eondel respected her, even considered her a friend, but they would never think about her romantically. Despite his professed annoyance with courtly games of matrimony, Shudin was reacting favorably to Torine's advances, but he had never once looked at Serene. Eondel was far older than she, but Serene could sense his feelings toward her. Respect, admiration, and a willingness to serve. It was as if he didn't realize she was a woman. Serene knew she was married now and shouldn't be thinking about such things, but it was hard to regard herself as wedded. And she had known no husband. She craved something, a sign that at least some of the men found her attractive, though she never would have responded to any such advances. The point was irrelevant. The men of Aerilan feared her as much as they respected her. She had grown up without affection outside of her family, and it appeared she would continue that way. At least she had Kaiyan and his family. Still, if she had come to Aerilan searching for acceptance, then she had failed. She would have to be content with respect.
Ah, there is my darling princess!
Serene turned to find that Kaiyan had joined Lukel and Eondel.
Uncle, what are you doing here?
I got home and found the house empty. There's only one person who would dare steal a man's entire family.
She didn't steal us, father. We just heard that you were going to make Harakashweed soup again.
Kaiyan regarded his jovial son for a moment, rubbing his chin where his beard once grew.
Oh, he got a good sale then.
A very lucrative one.
Domai protect us.
Kaiyan settled his stout body into a nearby chair. Serene took a seat next to him.
You heard about the king's projected earnings, Eni?
Yes, uncle.
I never thought I'd see the day when I was encouraged by Iadon's success. Your plan to save him worked. And from what I hear, Eondel and the rest are expected to bring forth exemplary crops.
Then why do you look so worried?
I'm getting old, Eni.
Old men tend to worry. Most recently, I've been concerned about your excursions into Elantris. Your father would never forgive me if something happened to you in there.
Not that he's going to forgive you anytime soon, anyway.
Oh, that's the truth. What do you know of that?
Nothing. But I'm hoping you'll rectify my ignorance.
Some things are better left unrectified. Your father and I were both a whole lot more foolish when we were younger. Eventeo might be a great king, but he's a pathetic brother. Of course, I won't soon win any awards for my fraternal affection either.
But what happened?
We had a disagreement.
What kind of disagreement?
Oh, no, Heaney. I'm not as easy to manipulate as your larks over there. You just keep on wondering about this one. And don't pout.
I never pout. Uncle Kaiyan, are there any secret passages in Iadon's palace?
I'd be as surprised as the three virgins if there aren't. Iadon is just about the most paranoid man I've ever known. He must have at least a dozen escape routes in that fortress he calls home.
Serini resisted the urge to point out that Kaiyan's home was as much a fortress as the king's. As their conversation lulled, Kaiyan turned to ask Eondel about Lukel's sour melon deal that had been so lucrative. Eventually, Serini stood and retrieved her sire, then walked out onto the practice floor. She fell into form and began moving through a solo pattern. Her blade whipped and snapped, the well-practiced motions now routine, and her mind soon began to wander. Was Eishi right? Was she allowing herself to become distracted by Elantris and its enigmatic ruler? She couldn't lose track of her greater tasks. Prathan was planning something, and Telrai couldn't possibly be as indifferent as he made himself out to be. She had a lot of things she needed to watch, and she had enough experience with politics to realize how easy it was to overextend oneself. However, she was increasingly interested in spirit. It was rare to find someone politically skilled enough to hold her attention, but in Aerilan she had found two. In a way, spirit was even more fascinating than the Gyorn. While Hraithen and she were very frank about their enmity, spirit somehow manipulated and foiled her, while at the same time acting like an old friend. Most alarmingly, she almost didn't care. Instead of being outraged when she filled his demands with useless items, he had seemed impressed. He had even complimented her on her frugality, noting that the cloth she sent must have been bought at a discount, considering its color. In all things, he remained friendly, indifferent to her sarcasm, and she felt herself responding. There, in the center of the cursed city, was finally a person who seemed willing to accept her. She wished she could laugh at his clever remarks, agree with his observations, and share his concerns. The more confrontational she tried to be, the less threatened he was. He actually seemed to appreciate her defiance.
Serini, dear?
Sweat streamed down Serini's face, running alongside the inside of her collar. She hadn't realized how vigorous her training had become. She relaxed, resting the tip of her sire on the floor. Deora's hair was pulled into a neat bun, and her uniform was unstained by sweat. As usual, the woman did all things with grace, even exercise.
Do you want to talk about it, dear?
About what?
I've seen that look before, child. He's not for you. But, of course, you've realized that, haven't you?
Serini paled. How could she know? Could the woman read thoughts? Then, however, Serini followed her aunt's gaze. Deora was looking at Shunin and Tarine. Shunin showed the young girl a few basic thrusts.
I know it must be hard, Serini, being locked into a marriage with no chance for affection, never knowing your husband, or feeling the comfort of his love. Perhaps in a few years, after your place here in Aerilon is more secure, you could allow yourself a relationship that is covert. It is much too soon for that now, however.
Deora's eyes softened as she watched Shunin clumsily drop the sword.
Besides, child, this one is meant for another.
You think...
I've seen the look in your eyes these last few days. And I've also seen the frustration. The two emotions go together more often than youthful hearts expect.
I assure you, Aunt, I have no interest in Lord Shuden.
Of course, dear.
Deora patted her arm, then retreated. Serene shook her head, walking over to get a drink. What were these signs Deora had claimed to see in her? The woman was usually so observant. What had made her misjudge so grievously in this instance? Serene liked Shuden, of course, but not romantically. He was too quiet, and like Eondel, a bit too rigid for her taste. Serene was well aware she would need a man who would know when to give her space, but who also wouldn't let her bend him in any way she chose. With a shrug, Serene put Deora's misguided assumptions from her mind, then sat down to contemplate just how she was going to throw awry Spirit's latest and most detailed list of demands. Prathan stared at the paper for a long, long period of time. It was an accounting of King Iadon's finances, as calculated by Dorethi spies. Somehow, Iadon had recovered from his lost ships and cargo. Telrai would not be king. Prathan sat at his desk, still in the armor he'd been wearing, when he entered to find the note. The paper sat immobile in his stunned fingers. Perhaps, if he hadn't been faced by other worries, the news wouldn't have shocked him so much. He had dealt with plenty of upset plans in his life. Beneath the paper, however, sat his list of local Arteths. He had offered every single one of them the position of head Arteth, and they had all refused. Only one man remained who could take the position. Diloth all but ruled the chapel. He didn't even inform Hraithen of half the meetings and sermons he organized. There was a vengefulness to the way Diloth was wresting control away from Hraithen. Perhaps the Arteth was still angered over the incident with the Elantrian prisoner. Or perhaps Diloth was just transferring his anger and frustration over Serene's humanization of the Elantrians against Hraithen instead. Regardless, Diloth was slowly seizing power. It was subtle, but it seemed inevitable. The crafty Arteth claimed that menial organizational items were beneath the time of my Lord Hroden, a claim that was, to an extent, well-founded. Giorns rarely had much to do with day-to-day chapel practices, and Hraithen couldn't do everything himself. Diloth stepped in to fill the gaps. Even if Hraithen didn't break down and make the obvious move, appointing Diloth head Arteth, the eventual result would be the same. Hraithen was losing his grip on Aerilon. Nobles went to Diloth now, instead of him. And while Dorethi membership was still growing, it wasn't increasing quickly enough. Serene had somehow foiled the plot to put Telrai on the throne. And after visiting the city, the people of Kaei would no longer regard Elantrians as demons. Hraithen was setting a poor precedent for his activities in Aerilon. On top of it all stood Hraithen's wavering faith. This was not the time to call his beliefs into question. Hraithen understood this. However, understanding, as opposed to feeling, was the root of his problem. Now that the seed of uncertainty had been given purchase in his heart, he couldn't easily uproot it. It was too much. Suddenly, it seemed as if his room were falling in on him. The walls and ceiling shrunk closer and closer, as if to crush him beneath their weight. Hraithen stumbled, trying to escape, and fell to the marble floor. Nothing worked. Nothing could help him. He rolled to his knees and began to pray. As a priest of Shudereth, Hraithen spent hours in prayer each week. However, those prayers were different. More a form of meditation than a communication, a means of organizing his thoughts. This time, he begged. For the first time in years, he found himself pleading for aid. Hraithen reached out to that god he had served so long, he had almost forgotten him. The god he had shuffled away in a flurry of logic and understanding. A god he had rendered impotent in his life, though he sought to further his influence. For once, Hraithen felt unfit to perform on his own. For once, he admitted a need for help. He didn't know how long he knelt, praying fervently for aid, compassion, and mercy.
Come. I apologize for disturbing, my lord.
The man was a minor priest.
But this just arrived for you.
The priest pushed a small crate into the room, then closed the door. Wraithen rose on unstable feet. It was dark outside, though he had begun his prayers before noon. Had he really spent that long in supplication? A little dazed, Wraithen picked up the box and placed it on his desk, prying loose the lid with a dagger. Inside, packed with hay, was a rack containing 4 vials.
My lord Wraithen, here is the poison you requested. All of the effects are exactly as you specified. The liquid must be ingested, and the victim won't display any symptoms until about 8 hours afterwards. In all things, praise to Lord Yardeth, Fortin, apothecary, and loyal subject of Wirin.
Wraithen picked up a vial, regarding its dark contents with wonder. He had almost forgotten his late-night call to Fortin. He vaguely remembered assuming he would administer the poison to Diloth. That plan wouldn't work anymore. He needed something more spectacular. Wraithen swished the poison around in its vial for a moment, then pulled off the stopper and drank it down in a single gulp. The most difficult part was deciding where to begin reading. The bookshelves extended out of sight, their information stretching as if to eternity. Riordan was certain that the clues he needed were contained somewhere within the vast sea of pages, but finding them seemed a daunting task indeed. Karate was the one who made the discovery. She located a low bookshelf near the side of the room opposite the entrance. A set of about 30 volumes squatted on the shelf, waiting in their dust. They dictated a cataloging system with numbers relating to the various columns and rows of the library. From it, Riordan easily located the books on Aeon Dor. He selected the least complicated volume he could find and set to work. Riordan restricted knowledge of the library to himself, Galadon, and Karate. Not only did he fear a repeat of Aeondin's book boiling, but he sensed a sacredness to the structure. It was not a place to be invaded by visitors, misunderstanding fingers that would disorganize books and shatter the calm. They kept the pool a secret as well, giving Mary Shea and Seolin a simplified explanation. Riordan's own longings warned him how dangerous the pool was. There was a part of him that wanted to seek out its deadly embrace, the refreshment of destruction. If the people knew there was an easy, painless way to escape the suffering, many would take it without deliberation. The city would be depopulated in a matter of months. Letting them do so was an option, of course. What right had he to keep the others from their peace? Still, Riordan felt that it was too soon to give up on Elantris. In the weeks before Serini began giving out food, he had seen that Elantris could forget its pains and its hungers. The Elantrians could move beyond their urges. There was an escape for them, besides destruction. But not for him. The pain swelled with each passing day. It drew strength from the door, bringing him a little closer to submission with its every assault. Fortunately, he had the books to distract him. He studied them with hypnotic fascination, finally discovering the simple explanations he had sought for so long. He read how the complex Aeon equations worked together. Drawing a line slightly longer in proportion to the rest of an Aeon could have drastic effects. 2 Aeon equations could start the same, but like 2 rocks rolled down a mountain on slightly different paths, they could end up doing completely different things, all by changing the length of a few lines. The books explained that the door existed in a place that was full of pressure, and so the energy pushed its way through any viable exit, moving from an area of high concentration to one of low. However, because of the door's nature, it could enter the physical world only through gates of the proper size and shape. Elantrians could create rifts within their drawings, providing a means for the door to escape. And those drawings would determine what form the energy took when it appeared. However, if even one line was of the wrong proportion, the door would be unable to enter, like a square trying to force its way through a round hole. Some theorists describe the process using unfamiliar words like frequency and pulse length. Riordan was only beginning to understand how much scientific genius was held in the library's musty pages. Still, for all his studies, he was disappointingly unable to find out what had made Aeon Door stop working. He could only guess that the door had changed somehow. Perhaps now, instead of a square, the door was a triangle, and no matter how many square-shaped Aeons Riordan drew, the energy couldn't get through. What could have led to the door's sudden shift was beyond him.
How did that get in here?
The doula pointed toward the Saeon, Aeon, who floated along the top of a bookshelf, his light casting shadows on the books.
I don't know.
I have to admit, Zul, your Saeon is creepy.
All of the mad Saeons are that way.
Yes, but the others generally stay away from people.
Galadon eyed Aeon, shivering slightly. The Saeon, as usual, didn't pay any apparent attention to Galadon, though Aeon did seem to like staying near Riordan.
Well, anyway, Saeolin's asking for you.
Riordan nodded, closing his book and rising from the small desk, one of many at the back of the library. He joined Galadon at the doorway. The doula shot one last uncomfortable look at Aeon before closing the door, locking the Saeon in darkness.
I don't know, Saeolin.
My lord, we have little choice. My men have too many injuries. It would be pointless to stand against Shaeor today. The wild men would barely pause to laugh as they pushed us out of the way.
The soldier was right. They couldn't keep holding Shaeor's men away from Serini. Though Saeolin had grown quite proficient at fighting with his left hand, there just weren't enough warriors left to protect the courtyard. In addition, it seemed that Shaeor's men were growing more and more dangerous in their ferocity. They could obviously sense that there was food in the courtyard, and the inability to reach it had driven them to an even deeper level of insanity. Riordan had tried leaving food out for them, but the distraction only worked for a short time. They stuffed their faces, then rushed on, even more furious than before. They were driven by a single-minded, obsessive goal: to reach the carts of food in the courtyard.
If we only had more soldiers.
Riordan had lost many of his people to Serini's handouts. While Shaeor's numbers were apparently remaining strong, Riordan and Galadon had both offered to join Saeolin's fighters, but the grizzled captain would hear nothing of it. They had few choices left, and it appeared Saeolin's plan was the best of several bad options.
All right, do it.
Very good, my lord. I will begin the preparations. We only have a few minutes until the princess arrives.
Riordan dismissed Saeolin with a nod. The soldier's plan was a desperate last-ditch attempt at a trap. Shaeor's men tended to take the same path each day before splitting up and trying to work their way into the courtyard, and Saeolin planned to ambush them as they approached. It was risky, but it was probably their only chance. The soldiers could not continue fighting as they were.
I suppose we should go then.
Galadon nodded. As they turned to walk toward the courtyard, Riordan couldn't help feeling uncomfortable with the decision he'd made. If Saeolin lost, then the wild men would break through. If Saeolin won, it would mean the death or incapacitation of dozens of Elantrians. Men on both sides that Riordan should have been able to protect.
Either way, I'm a failure.
Serini could tell something was wrong, but she wasn't sure what it could be. Spirit was nervous, his friendly banter subdued. It wasn't her, it was something else. Perhaps some burden of leadership. She wanted to ask him what it was. She moved through the now familiar routine of food distribution, Spirit's worry making her nervous. Each time he approached to accept an item from the cart, she looked into his eyes and saw his tension. She couldn't force herself to ask about the problem. She had gone too long feigning coldness, too long rebuffing his attempts at friendship. Just as in Teod, she had locked herself into a role. And just as before, she cursed herself, not quite knowing how to escape her self-imposed indifference. Unfortunately, Spirit didn't share her same inhibitions. As the noblemen gathered to begin the handouts, Spirit pulled Serini aside.
What?
Spirit glanced back at the collection of noblemen, and even a few noble women, who were waiting for the Elantrians to approach and receive their food.
Something might happen today.
What?
Do you remember how I told you that not all Elantrians were as docile as the ones here?
Yes.
Well, just be ready. Keep your guards close.
Serini sensed a new emotion in his eyes. Something she hadn't seen in him before. Guilt. As he turned back toward the food line, leaving his foreboding words ringing in her mind, a part of Serini was suddenly grateful that she had remained aloof. He was hiding something from her. Something big. Her political senses warned her to be wary. Whatever he had been expecting, however, didn't come. By the time they had begun handing out food, Spirit had relaxed somewhat, speaking cheerfully. Serini began to think that he had made a big show out of nothing.
My lord! Sailor's men attack!
Oh my, no!
A moment later, he saw Saolin's beleaguered form appear at the mouth of an alley. The soldier was swinging his sword wildly at four separate opponents. One of the wild men smashed a cudgel against Saolin's legs. Sheor's men leapt toward the group of aristocrats and Elantrians, their mouths open savagely. Then Eondel appeared. By some fortune of chance, he'd chosen to accompany Serini on the day's trip. As always, he had worn his sword, defying convention in favor of safety. Sheor's men weren't expecting resistance, and they stumbled over themselves before the general's swinging blade. Eondel's weapon, powered by healthy muscles, easily cut through the Elantrian flesh. His attack slowed the wildman long enough for the guards to join the battle, and they formed a line beside him. Finally, the nobles realized that they were in danger. Fortunately, they were only a few steps away from the gate, and they easily fled the chaos. Soon, only Raoden and Serini remained, looking at each other through the battle. One of Sheor's followers fell at their feet, knocking over a carton of grain mush. The creature's belly was sliced waist to neck.
I only wanted a little food.
Serini looked down at the creature, then took a step back. When she looked back up at Raoden, her eyes shone with the icy rage of betrayal.
You held food back from them, didn't you?
I did.
You tyrant! You heartless despot! I almost started trusting you! Ugh.
Then she was gone, dashing toward the gates as the soldiers fell back. Sheor's men did not follow, instead falling on the bounty that the nobles had abandoned. Raoden stepped back from the food. Sheor's men didn't even seem to notice him as they tore into the scattered supplies, stuffing their faces with dirty hands. Raoden watched them with tired eyes. It was over. The nobles would not enter Elantris again.
Saolin!
Raoden dashed across the courtyard to kneel beside his friend. The old soldier stared sightlessly into the sky, his head rocking back and forth.
Failed, my lord! Failed, my lord Spirit! Failed! Failed!
What have I done?
Raoden helplessly cradled the newly made Hoeid. Raoden stayed there, lost in sorrow, until long after Sheor's men had taken the last of the food and run off.
My lady, are you injured?
No, I'm fine.
Obviously unconvinced, the Saeon floated around her in a slow semicircle, searching for any outward signs of injury. Houses and shops passed quickly beyond the carriage window as the vehicle sped them back to the palace. Eondel, the carriage's owner, had stayed behind at the gate.
My lady, what is wrong?
I was right. I should be happy. I was right about him all along.
Spirit.
Serini rested her head against the back of the seat, staring up at the carriage's ceiling.
He was withholding food from the people. You should have seen them. Eshi, their starvation had driven them mad. Spirit's warriors kept them away from the courtyard, but they must have finally gotten hungry enough to fight back. I can't imagine how they did it. They didn't have armor or swords, just their hunger. And he didn't even try to deny it. He just stood there, watching his schemes fall apart. A stash of hoarded food at his feet. Ugh! Why am I so stupid? I knew what he was doing. Why does it bother me to find out I was right?
Recouping her composure the best she could, Sereni poked her head out of the window to see what was causing the ruckus. A double line of men in chain and leather marched past her carriage, their livery black and red. It was Iadon's personal guard, and they were heading for Elantris. Sereni felt a chill as she watched the grim-faced warriors. There was hardness in these men's eyes. They were prepared to kill, to slaughter. They arrived at the palace shortly, and Sereni hopped from the carriage without waiting for the coachman to pull down the steps. Her reputation with the palace staff was growing, and most knew to get out of her way as she stalked through the hallways.
We have a crisis!
Sereni slammed her palms down on Aedon's desk.
What in the blessed name of Domai do you think you're doing? There has been an attack on members of my court. It is my duty to respond.
Don't preach to me about duty, Iadon. You've been looking for an excuse to destroy Elantris for 10 years now. Only the people's superstitions kept you back.
Your point?
I am not going to be the one who gives you that excuse. Withdraw your men!
You, of all people, should appreciate the quickness of my response, Princess. It was your honor that was slighted by that attack.
I'm perfectly capable of protecting my own honor, Iadon. Those troops move in direct opposition to everything I've accomplished these last few weeks.
It was a fool's project anyway.
Iadon dropped a collection of papers to the table. The top sheet ruffled from the motion, and Sereni could read its scribbled commands. The words Elantris's and extermination stood out, stark and foreboding.
Go back to your room, Sereni. This will all be over in a matter of hours.
You listen to me, Iadon. You will withdraw your soldiers from Elantris. You will leave those people alone. Otherwise, I will begin to tell people what I know about you. Defiance, Iadon? I think you'll feel differently when everyone knows the truth. You know they already think you a fool. They pretend to obey you, but you know in that whispering part of your heart that they mock you with their obedience. You think they didn't hear about your lost ships? You think they weren't laughing to themselves at how their king would soon be as poor as a baron? Oh, they knew. How will you face them, Iadon, when they learn how you really survived? When I show them how I rescued your income, how I gave you the contracts entailed, how I saved your crown.
Beads of sweat appeared on his brow as he began to crack beneath her unyielding gaze.
You are a fool, Iadon. I know it, your nobles know it, and the world knows it. You have taken a great nation and squashed it in your greedy hands. You have enslaved the people, and you have defiled Aerilon's honor. And despite it all, your country grows poorer. Even you, the king, are so destitute that only a gift from Teod lets you keep your crown.
The king seemed to shrink, his arrogant act withering before her anger.
How will it look, Iadon? How will it feel to have the entire court know you are indebted to a woman? A foolish girl at that. You would be revealed. Everyone would know what you are. Nothing more than an insecure, trivial, incapable invalid.
Aedon plopped down into his seat. Sereni handed him a pen.
Repeal it.
Iadon's fingers shook as he scribbled a counter command at the bottom of the page, then stamped it with his personal seal. Sereni snatched up the paper, then stalked from the room.
Aishi, stop those soldiers! Tell them new orders are coming!
Yes, my ladies!
Aishi shot down the corridor at the window, moving more quickly than even a galloping horse.
You!
Serini slapped the rolled-up sheet of paper against a guard's breastplate.
Take this to Elantris!
The man accepted the paper uncertainly.
Run!
Serini folded her arms, watching the man dash down the hallway. Then she turned to regard the second guard. He began to twitch nervously beneath her gaze.
I'll make sure he gets there.
Serini stood for a moment, then turned back to the king's study, pulling the doors closed. She was left with the sight of Iodon, slumped in his chair, elbows on the desktop, and head cradled in his hands. By the time Serini reached Elantris, the new orders had long since arrived, and the king's guards had departed from the gates. Serini made the strenuous climb to the top of the wall to gaze down at the courtyard. Her food cart stood abandoned in the center of the square, overturned with broken boxes running in a jagged line before it. There were bodies, too. Fallen members of the attacking party, their corpses rotting in the muck. Serini froze, her muscles stiffening. One of the corpses was still moving. She leaned over the stone railing, staring down at the fallen man. The distance was great, but she could still see the distinct lines of the man's legs, lying a dozen feet from his chest. Some powerful blow had separated him at the waist. There was no way he could have survived such a wound. Yet, insanely, his arms waved in the air with hopeless randomness.
Merciful Domai.
Her hand rose to her breast, her fingers seeking out her small Karathi pendant. She scanned the courtyard with disbelieving eyes. Some of the other bodies were moving as well, despite horrible wounds. They say that the Elantrians are dead, she realized. That they are the deceased whose minds refuse to rest. Her eyes opened for the first time. Serini realized how the Elantrians survived without food. They didn't need to eat. But why then did they? Serini shook her head, trying to clear her mind both of confusion and the struggling corpses below. As she did so, her eyes fell on another figure. It knelt in the shadow of Elantris's wall, its posture somehow bespeaking incredible sorrow. Serini felt herself drawn along the walkway in the direction of the form, her hand dragging along the stone railing. She stopped when she stood above him. Somehow, she knew the figure belonged to Spirit. He was clutching a body in his arms, rocking back and forth with his head bowed. The message was clear. Even a tyrant could love those who followed him.
I saved you. The king would have destroyed you, but I saved your life. It wasn't for you, Spirit. It was for all those poor people that you rule over.
Spirit didn't notice her. She tried to remain angry at him. However, looking down and sensing his agony, she couldn't lie, even to herself. The day's events disturbed her for several reasons. She was angry at having her plans disrupted. She regretted that she would no longer be able to feed the struggling Elantrians. She was unhappy with the way the aristocracy would see Elantris, but she was also saddened that she would never be able to see him again. Tyrant or not, he had seemed like a good man. Perhaps only a tyrant could lead in a place like Elantris. Perhaps he was the best that the people had. Regardless, she would probably never see him again. She would never again look into those eyes that, despite the emaciated form of his body, seemed so vibrant and alive. There was a complexity in them that she would never be able to unravel. It was over. She sought refuge in the only place in Kayi she felt safe. Kaiyan let her in, then held her as she fell into his arms. It was a perfectly humiliating end to a very emotional day. However, the hug was worth it. Serini finally released him, wiping her eyes. Kaiyan simply placed a large hand on her shoulder and led her into the dining room, where the rest of the family sat around the table. Even Adayan.
Speak the name of the lion and he will come to feast.
Adayan's haunted, slightly unfocused eyes found her face.
From here to
Elantris.
Chaos jumped up onto her chair.
Serene! Did they really try and eat you?
No, Chaos.
Serene found a seat at the table.
They just wanted some of our food.
Chaos, leave your cousin alone. She has had a full day.
And I missed it.
Chaos plopped down in her seat. Then she turned angry eyes on her brother.
Why did you have to get sick?
It wasn't my fault.
Daorn didn't seem very disappointed to have missed the battle.
Hush, children.
It's all right. I can talk about it.
Well, then, is it true?
Yes, some Elantrians attacked us. But no one got hurt, at least not on our side.
No, not that. I meant about the king. Is it true that you yelled him into submission?
That got out?
They say your voice carried all the way to the main hall. Aedon still hasn't left his study.
I might have gotten a little carried away.
You did the right thing, dear. Aedon is far too accustomed to having the court jump when he so much as sneezes. He probably didn't know what to do when someone actually stood up to him.
It wasn't that hard. Beneath all the bluster, he's very insecure.
Most men are, dear.
Cousin, what did we ever do without you? Life was so boring before you decided to sail over and mess it all up for us.
I would rather it stayed a little less messed up. Aedon isn't going to react too well when he recovers.
If he gets out of line, you can always just yell at him again.
No. She's right. Monarchs can't afford to be reprimanded in public. We might have a much harder time of things when this is all through.
Either that, or he'll just give up and abdicate in favor of Serene.
Just as your father feared.
Aishi floated in the window.
He's always worried that Aedrilan wouldn't be able to deal with you, my lady.
Did they go back?
They did.
Serene had sent him to follow Aedon's guards, in case they decided to ignore their orders.
The captain immediately went to see the king. He left when his majesty refused to open his doors.
It wouldn't do for a soldier to see his king bawling like a child.
Yeah, but anyway, I...
Kaian disappeared, then returned with an eager Lord Shuden.
My lady.
Shuden bowed slightly to Serene. Then he turned to Lukel.
I just heard some very interesting news.
It's all true. We asked Serene.
It isn't about that.
What else could possibly happen today?
You'll never guess who the Sheod took last night.
Prathan didn't try to hide his transformation. He walked solemnly from his chambers, exposing his damnation to the entire chapel. Diloth was in the middle of morning services. It was worth the loss of hair and skin color to see the short, Aerilish priest stumble backward in horrified shock. The Karathi priests came for Raithan a short time later. They gave him a large, enveloping white robe to hide his disfiguration, then led him from the now empty chapel. Raithan smiled to himself as he saw the confused Diloth watching from his alcove, his eyes openly hating Raithan for the first time. The Karathi priests took him to their chapel, stripped him, and washed his now black spotted body with water from the Aridel River. Then they wrapped him in a white robe constructed of thick, rag-like strips of cloth. After washing and clothing him, the priests stepped back and allowed Omine to approach. The short, balding leader of Aerilish Karathi blessed Raithan quietly, tracing the symbol of Aeon Omai on his chest. The Aerilish man's eyes betrayed just a hint of satisfaction. After that, they led Raithan through the city streets. However, at the city itself, they found a large squadron of troops wearing Aedon's colors blocking their path. The soldiers stood with hands on weapons, speaking in hushed tones. Raithan regarded them with surprise. He recognized men preparing for battle. Omine argued with the captain of the Elantris City Guard for a time, while the other priests pulled Raithan into a squat building beside the guardhouse, a holding place carved with Aeon Omai. Raithan watched through the room's small window as two winded guards galloped up and presented Aedon's soldiers with a rolled-up sheet of paper. The captain read it, frowning, then turned to argue with the messenger. After this, Omine returned, explaining that they would have to wait. And wait they did, the better part of 2 hours. Raithan had heard that the priests would only throw people into Elantris during a certain time of day, but apparently it was a window of time and not a specific moment. Eventually, the priests stuffed a small basket of food in Wraithen's arms, offered one final prayer to their pitiful god, and pushed him through the gates. Wraithen stood in the city, his head bald, his skin tainted with large black splotches. An Elantrian. The city was much the same at eye level as it had been from the wall, filthy, rotting, and unholy. It held nothing for him. He spun around, tossing aside the meager basket of food and dropping to his knees.
O Yadith, Lord of all creation, hear now the petition of a servant in your empire. Lift this taint from my blood. Restore me to life. I implore you with all the power of my position as a holy Gjorn.
Saolin didn't open his eyes as he sank into the pool. He bobbed for a moment. After that, he melted into the blue liquid. Raoden watched the process solemnly. They had waited for 3 days, hoping against all that the grizzled soldier would regain his wits. He had not. They had brought him to the pool partially because his wound was so terrible, and partially because Raoden knew that he could never enter the Hall of the Fallen with Saolin inside. The mantra, "I have failed, my lord spirit," would have been too much.
Come, Sul. He's gone.
Yes, he is. And it's my fault.
For once, the burdens and agonies of Raoden's body seemed insignificant compared with those of his soul. They returned to him, first as a trickle, then as a flood. It took days for them to realize and believe that Serini wasn't going to return. No more handouts. No more eating, waiting, and eating again. Then they came back, as if suddenly awakened from a stupor, remembering that once, not so long ago, there had been purpose in their lives. Raoden turned them back to their old jobs, cleaning, fanning, and building. With proper tools and materials, the work became less an exercise in intentional time-wasting and more a productive means of rebuilding new Elantris. Piecemeal roofs were replaced with more durable, functional creations. Additional seed corn provided a chance for a second planting, one much larger and ambitious than the first. The short wall around new Elantris was reinforced and expanded, though for the moment Sheor's men remained quiet. Raoden knew, however, that the food they had gathered from Serini's cart wouldn't last long. The wild men would return. The numbers that came to him after Serini were much greater than those that had followed him before. Raoden was forced to acknowledge that despite the temporary setbacks they caused, Serini's excursions into Elantris had ultimately been beneficial. She had proven to the people that no matter how much their hunger hurt, simply feeding their bellies wasn't enough. Joy was more than just an absence of discomfort. So when they came back to him, they no longer worked for food. They worked because they feared what they would become if they did not.
O Yadith, Lord of all creation.
He shouldn't be here, Galadon.
Raoden studied the Fjordel priest from atop their garden roof observation point.
You're certain that's the Gjorn?
He says so in that prayer of his. Besides, he's definitely Fjordel. That frame of his is too large to be Aeonic.
Fjordels don't get taken by the Sheod. Only people from Aerelon, Teod, and occasionally Duladel.
I know. Perhaps it's just percentages. There aren't many Fjordels in Aerelon. Perhaps that's why they never get taken.
Then why don't Jindos ever get taken? There's plenty of them living along the Spice Route.
I don't know.
Listen to him pray, Sul. As if the rest of us hadn't tried that already.
I wonder how long he'll wait.
3 days already. Must be starting to get hungry, Kolo.
Raoden nodded. Even after 3 days of almost continual prayer, the Gjorn's voice was firm. Everything else considered, Riordan had to respect the man's determination.
Well, when he finally realizes he's not getting anywhere, we'll invite him to join us.
Trouble, Sul?
Galadon followed the doula's gesture, picking out a few huddled shapes in the shadows to the Giorn's left.
Don't I know?
He watched Sheor's men slink from the alleyway. Apparently, their food had run out even more quickly than Riordan had assumed. They had probably returned to the courtyard to look for scraps, but they found something much more promising. The still full basket of food at the Giorn's feet.
Come on.
Riordan turned to climb down from the roof. There was a time when Sheor's men might have gone directly for the food. However, recent events had changed the wild men. They had begun wounding indiscriminately, as if they had realized that the fewer mouths that opposed them, the more likely they were to get food.
Dolokhin burned me for helping a Giorn.
Unfortunately, he and Riordan moved too slowly. They were too late to save Sheor's men. Riordan rounded the side of the building as the first wildman jumped at the Giorn's back. The Fjordel leapt to his feet, spinning with near inhuman speed and catching Sheor's man by the head. Kraithen threw him against the wooden gate. The other two attacked in unison. One met with a powerful spinning kick. The other received three successive punches to the face. Then a kick to the midsection. The last man charged, unfazed by his companion's lack of success. Riordan stared, mouth half open.
Should have realized. Dereti priests can take care of themselves, Golo.
Riordan nodded slowly, watching the priest return smoothly to his knees and resume his prayers. Riordan had heard that all Dereti priests were trained in the infamous monasteries of Fjordan, where they were required to undergo vigorous physical training. However, he hadn't realized that a middle-aged Giorn would maintain his skills. The two wild men, who could still move, crawled away, while the other two lay where they had fallen.
It's a waste. We could have used those men back in New Elantris.
I don't see what we can do about it.
Riordan stood, turning toward the market section of Elantris.
I do.
They penetrated Sheor's territory so quickly and directly that they got nearly to the bank before they were noticed. Riordan didn't respond when Sheor's men began to howl. He continued to walk, resolute, focused on his goal. Galadon, Karate, and Daishi, Karate's former second, one of the few experienced fighting men left in Rayodin's camp, accompanied him. Each nervously carried a medium-sized sack in his arms. Sheor's men followed them, cutting off their escape. After the losses they had received over the last few weeks, there could only be a couple of dozen men left in Sheor's band. But those few seemed to multiply and shift in the shadows. Galadon shot Riordan an apprehensive look.
You'd better be sure as Dolokhin you know what you're doing, Sul.
Riordan set his jaw firmly. He had only a single hope, his belief in the rational nature of the human soul. Sheor was much the same as before. Though her men must have delivered some of their spoils to her, one would never have known it from her screaming. Riordan led his small group into the bank. Sheor's remaining followers filed in behind, approaching slowly, waiting for their goddess's inevitable command to kill the intruders. Riordan moved first. He nodded to the others, and each dropped their sacks. Corn spilled across the uneven floor of the bank, mixing with the slime and falling into cracks and crevices. Riordan waved his people to the side as Sheor's men descended upon the corn. But her followers were too busy stuffing their mouths. Riordan and the others left as simply as they had come. The first one approached New Elantris barely a few hours later. Riordan stood beside the large fire they had kindled atop one of the taller buildings. The blaze required many of their precious wood scraps, and Galadon had been against it from the start. Riordan ignored the objections. Sheor's men needed to see the fire to make the connection, the leap that would bring them back to sensibility. The first wild man appeared out of the evening's darkness. He moved furtively, His stance nervous and bestial, he cradled a ripped sack, a couple of handfuls of grain clutched within. Raoden motioned for his warriors to move back.
What do you want?
The man stared back dumbly.
I know you understand me. You can't have been in here long, 6 months at the most. That's not enough to forget language, even if you want to convince yourself that it is.
The man held up the sack, his hands glistening with slime.
What?
Cook!
The grain they dropped had been seed corn, hardened over the winter to be planted in spring. Though they had almost certainly tried, Sheor's men wouldn't have been able to chew or swallow it without great pain. And so, Raoden had hoped that somewhere in the back of their abandoned minds, these men would remember that they had once been human. Hoped that they would recall civilization and the ability to cook. Hoped they would confront their humanity.
I won't cook your food for you, but I will let you do it yourself.